WHYY.
I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Pennsylvania voters will have a real choice this November when they go to the polls to vote for governor. Republican incumbent Tom Corbett and his Democratic challenger, businessman Tom Wolf, differ when it comes to education funding, to taxing natural gas, the state income tax, and health care for Medicaid recipients, to name just a few issues. There is no third-party candidate this year. The ad wars between the two Toms have already started, and there will be three debates, September 22nd, October 1st, and October 8th. Both candidates have been invited to be a solo guest on Radio Times. But first, we asked Alan Novak and T.J. Rooney to join us today on Radio Times. Alan Novak is former chairman of the Republican State Committee of Pennsylvania, as well as the president currently of founder of Novak Strategic Advisors, and that's a public and government affairs firm in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Alan Novak, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be here, Marty. Thank you.
You're welcome. Also with us, as I said, T.J. Rooney, former chair of the Pennsylvania Democratic Party, former member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, currently a partner at Eisenhower Rooney. That's an issue advocacy firm located in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, active in Pennsylvania's Democratic Party. T.J. Rooney, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Wonderful to be here.
Alan, let me begin with you and begin with a brand new Quinnipiac poll. I'll just quote from the first paragraph here. Pennsylvania likely voters say businessman Tom Wolf is better than Republican Governor Tom Corbett on every measure, including handling the top issues of the economy and jobs and education, giving him an overwhelming 59-35% lead 8 weeks before the election. Is there any way that Tom Corbett can overcome this disadvantage?
Well, Marty, they are very tough numbers, particularly where we are here in almost the middle of September. But I wouldn't say, given the fact that there's still some time, certainly Corbett is playing with a clock that's really ticking very quickly now. But I wouldn't say it's impossible. I would say he needs to dramatically change the dialogue, change his perception, and he needs to. And there's always the chance of the October surprise. Although one of the things I was thinking that could be an October surprise, the president took off the table. I had said almost a week and a half ago with TJ, if the president does something sweeping on immigration reform, it could drive turnout among Republicans in Pennsylvania that could benefit Corbett. Well, the president's taken that off the table because of activities in Senate races around the country.
How do you see these numbers, TJ? And it's this is one of a number of polls that puts Tom Wolf way ahead of Tom Corbett.
Yeah, it's really striking. Yeah, 24 points just on the horse race. But when you look at when you dig into it a little bit, the underpinnings are really, really solid for Mr. Wolf. He leads 10 points among men, 34 points among women, and of those who expressed a preference to either candidate, 84% of those folks are pretty much dug in. So the cake is being, if it's not baked, it's about to get iced.
But do you think there's anything, Alan, that Tom Corbett can do? And I'll just read a little bit down into this poll that we got from Quinnipiac. What's Tom Corbett's biggest problem? Tom Corbett. Is that his biggest problem?
I think it is. And I think in those numbers that TJ was citing, you dig down into the Republican numbers. You see where from the last poll that we saw to this poll, Tom Wolf has even solidified the Democrats to a greater degree. He's opened a gap with independents. But then you look at, to your point, Tom Corbett being Tom Corbett, the numbers for Republicans, where Corbett's getting 66%, for an incumbent governor, that's a problem. And that's a problem that is not about party. That's a problem about the incumbent governor. It's not like they don't know who he is. They know who he is.
Right. He's been here for 4 years.
Correct.
I mean, and I realize you're a Democrat here,
sure.
But what do you see as Tom Corbett's problem? And I think everyone agrees that he's got one.
Yeah. I mean, the governor can't seem to get out of his own way. And so even if there were a pathway, even if there were some sort of magic solution, it would be hard for him to implement. You know, his skill set is just not a politically given or driven skill set. The governor has always had more of kind of a prosecutorial approach, demeanor, mentality. And, you know, that works sometimes, some places, some days, some ways. It just doesn't work here in Pennsylvania.
I've interviewed a number of reporters who have covered Tom Corbett, and they say one-on-one, you know, in a sort of more personal, less political situation, he's a pretty nice guy. You're nodding your head, Alan.
I agree with that. I've been in small group settings with him. I've been at dinner with some people that are, you know, one-on-one, two-on-one type of settings. And especially when he's not talking policy or politics, he's a great guy. He tends to stiffen up in a room. He tends to stiffen up around the press. And I think you would find if he was in here one-on-one, you'd have a great time talking with him. But if he were in a, you know, a setting where the cameras were rolling, he's a different guy. And I agree with TJ that his skill set and his experience as prosecutor.
He was, I believe, at the Philadelphia Inquirer this week, and there was a piece about him this morning in the paper. And from his perspective, he explains his unpopularity is that he's taking on unpopular issues, whether it has to do with cutting future pension costs, whether it's trying to privatize the liquor stores here in the state or even privatize a state lottery. His explanation, TJ, is that these are tough issues that people don't want to deal with, and they're hard.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you need an explanation. You can't just say, well, you know, sorry, I'm kind of toast. So, but let's dig into that a little bit. You know, Marty, the governor has had the great good fortune to have everything going his way in the legislature. You know, the legislature.
A Republican legislature.
Exactly. So, again, the problem is not with Pennsylvanians. It's not with the legislature per se. It's with a governor who seemingly has an inability to lead and get things done. So, sure, you can take on all the big ticket items you want, but at the end of the day, the proof is in the results and what you deliver. And he hasn't delivered very much.
Why, Alan, do you think he hasn't? It is a Republican-led legislature. Why do you think he and the legislature sort of have not been on the same page on a number of issues?
I think it starts with how he got to governor. And he got to governor as a reform-driven, very high-profile prosecutions and grand juries around the legislature.
In fact, he indicted some of those
folks. He did.
They went to the slammer.
And he investigated each caucus. So it wasn't that he only investigated Democrats. He investigated Republicans as well. And there was some resentment to that, even among the Republican caucuses. I think who you are and who you choose to change that and start to build a working relationship didn't get off on the right foot. Some of that was just bad luck for him. But at the end of the day, the leader chooses who the leader's going to use in the key positions. And some of those choices did not help him build bridges. In fact, it helped those bridges become more difficult to build because the gaps got wider in the first year or so. He also inherited some tough things. In fairness to him, he did inherit a tough budget. He did inherit a tough economy. He has done what he said he's going to do. The problem, I think, is he said he was going to do some other things, and right. He hasn't been able to get them done.
Let me ask you, TJ, about Tom Wolf. As we know, for the primary, he had a lot of his own personal money. He spent it quickly up front and basically held a commanding lead through pretty much the whole primary. And voila, you know, he is the candidate. How much do you think Pennsylvanians know about Tom Wolf?
Well, I think they're certainly getting to know Tom. They Saul Scherr and his team, Mary Eisenhower and Joe Schaefer, did an incredible job in the primary, going up early when nobody else did. They had run of the field for about 6 weeks, and they put together spots that really encapsulate who Tom is. Tom Wolf is a really good guy. He is not, and I don't mean to disparage my friends and former colleagues, but he's not a politician. He's a very much he's cut.
What
from
does that mean?
What it means, Marty, to me in this case, in this race, is that he goes to if he's so fortunate, will go to Harrisburg without any Ozies. He's not going to, you know, he hasn't
doesn't
spent.
Owe anybody.
He doesn't owe anybody anything. He hasn't grown up in the political caste, so he hasn't started. He hasn't had to spend years and decades working various interest groups, stakeholder groups that are central to Democrats. He's a great Democrat. Make no bones about it. But he brings a different perspective to the office. Quite frankly, one Marty that we've never seen, or at least in our lifetimes, certainly haven't seen. So that presents a great opportunity. It also presents a great challenge. You know, Harrisburg is at sometimes a little bit of a snake pit, and you've got to navigate through those sharky waters. But I believe Tom is capable of doing that. Not only just capable
How
of winning,
though?
But governing.
I mean, if Corbyn couldn't do it with a Republican legislature,
let's go back to these preconceived ideas. Okay. You know, I think Tom, and I've said this to him, I've said it to the people around him many times, that I think think he would have an unprecedented opportunity to begin to work, you know, get to know folks as they are, not the way, you know, they've been perceived or portrayed, but as they are. Because we do have some serious problems in this state that need to be overcome. And Marty, I can tell you from talking with these leaders on the other side of the aisle that there is a willingness to do it. Good government is good politics. We haven't had good government in this state for at least the last 3.5 years. Mm. And Democrats and Republicans, make no mistake, Republicans care about getting stuff done too. There just has to be, you know, the kind of atmosphere and environment that fosters that notion. And we just haven't had that.
Alan, I should say to our listeners that we were talking before the air about, before going on the air, just how frustrated people are with our politics, whether it's in Harrisburg or in Trenton or in Dover or in Washington, D.C. People are just fed up with the vitriol, the inability to get things done.
I agree.
Do you think that has sort of penetrated into Pennsylvania politics?
Well, I think Pennsylvania is gridlocked along the same polarized lines and the lines that and the kind of the mentality and the culture that doesn't encourage bipartisanship, very similar to the national, what we see in Washington, D.C. I want to go back to a point TJ just raised. I think there's an unprecedented opportunity for Tom Wolf, should he continue to hold this lead and prevail, to govern in a bipartisan fashion. I hold the belief that nothing significant and major gets accomplished along a straight party line vote. I believe you need Republicans and Democrats, no matter how few or how many of each you need. You need a composition of a majority that comes from a bipartisan, comes from all four caucuses. Harrisburg hasn't operated that way in the last couple of years. The governor chose to work through Republican majorities, and I would say, not naively, just sometimes with those caucuses kind of have they do have factions and fractures within themselves that make a majority leader's job more difficult to deliver the entire caucus, and therefore, instead of negotiating with just two caucuses, I think you negotiate with all four caucuses and you look for the formula of votes you need out of all four caucuses to get something done.
But you're saying, Alan, that if Tom Wolf did that, he would get cooperation and perhaps get things done?
I can't look into the future and say that. I think the groundwork is laid there. I sense, like TJ mentioned, a willingness and a desire to work in a collaborative fashion. I'm not going to I will say, if I were a majority leader and I had 3 or 4 members that I couldn't count on, I might like to know that a majority leader the leader of the other party in the same body could get me some votes and I could get him some votes, and that might relieve the pressure on me. And I think this governor will have to operate, the next governor will have to operate that way. And if the next governor is Tom Wolf, he will have the chance to do that.
Let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Alan Novak, former chairman of the Republican State Committee of Pennsylvania. Also with us, TJ Rooney, former chair of the Pennsylvania Democratic Party. They have jobs now, even though they don't have those jobs. But we are talking about Pennsylvania politics, talking about the upcoming governor's race, and we want to hear from you. 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Delaware Theater Company opens their 36th anniversary season with A.R. Gurney's Love Letters, September 13th through October 5th. A poetic, elegant, and touching piece of theater starring Michael Learned from TV's The Waltons and Nurse and Daniel Davis from TV's The Nanny and Star Trek. Haven't you ever noticed that love comes when you least expect it? Tickets at 302-594-1100 or online at DelawareTheater.org. The Delaware Theater Company supports WHYY.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. The summer may be coming to an end, but that doesn't mean the music you listen to can't keep it alive a bit longer. KCRW DJ Ann Litt joins us with some final songs of summer next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, the Cooper Neurological Institute offers a full range of neurological and neurosurgical interventions, including minimally invasive brain surgery and complex spinal procedures. From epilepsy, migraine, and movement disorder care to Leskel Gamma Knife Perfection Technology and neuro-oncology services, Cooper provides access to specialists at 10 locations in South Jersey and Pennsylvania. For a consultation, cooperhealth.org/CNI or 856-968-7965.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. This is the Thursday edition of Radio Times, a show we call Ballot Talks. It's our weekly look at all things election politics related. And we're joined by two influential political consultants, if I can say that, from Pennsylvania, Republican Alan Novak and Democrat T.J. Rooney. And you can join us at radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times to join our conversation. We've been focusing on the state's gubernatorial race. We do have a Facebook comment from Doreen. She says, with Corbett down so down in the polls, will he do something dramatic like a severance tax on natural gas? I guess, Alan, I'm back to you. Do you think that's even in his wheelhouse?
No, I don't think it is.
And he has opposed it. I mean,
Consistently opposed it. And even if he were to try to do it, and some of us might encourage him to do that, I mean, I know there are senators in the Republican caucus that would support that and have, actually. I don't know if there's enough days left in the session as it's now planned to accomplish that. He would have to call him in or keep him in to do that. I would say that's the right thing to do.
Do something bold like that.
Yeah, something bold. But I think that's going to be difficult, and it goes against, I guess, the firm policy he's held.
The firm policy, and I guess also the pledge to Grover Norquist not to raise taxes.
Not to raise taxes, yeah.
Was that a mistake on his part? I mean, that was what seemed like eons ago. But
you know, it's easy to second guess it sitting here today. I guess I would talk about candidates who make those pledges. Be careful that you don't rely too much on the poll of the moment when you decide on things like that and not understand that history and polls and popular sentiment changes.
Going back to you, TJ, and actually going back to Tom Wolf, I got to make sure I don't confuse my Toms,
right.
The two Toms on the air, he has been pretty overt about the fact that he wants to have a severance tax on natural gas in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
I mean, he's not made any bones about that.
No, no. As a matter of fact, during the primary, he was criticized for his tax not being large enough, which really, you know, caused a lot of folks to chuckle. But sure, he does believe in imposing the tax. The other states that are fortunate to have this natural resource do, and Lord knows our state coffers need it. I mean, the notion that you would leave off the table a revenue source that could take care of a whole lot of problems, including problems here in the Philadelphia schools, you know, to not do that, to turn your back on that, to say it's off the table because you signed a piece of paper to some pledge to some fellow in Washington, D.C., you know, that's a head scratcher. That's not something that people in Pennsylvania respond favorably to.
And as I understand it, Tom Wolf wants to, if he gets elected and puts this tax in, would use some of that revenue for education, not just for Philadelphia, but I think across the state.
Sure, across the state. Absolutely. Absolutely, to backfill some of the – there's a hot debate going on the air and in radio stations like these across the state about whether or not, yeah, the governor cut $1 billion, didn't cut $1 billion. At the end of the day, they need money, and there's money there. And why in God's good name don't we tap it?
Well, it's funny you say that because we did a whole hour trying to get to the bottom of with two big players in Pennsylvania politics to talk about education funding. And I'm not sure what the explanation is, but clearly money was lost and school districts are having to tighten their belt. And Alan, this is such an important issue to so many people across the state, not just here in Philadelphia. Education funding.
Education is the driver. It's always among the top two or three issues, no matter what else is going on. Jobs and the economy is always up there. National security, depending on what's going on, is always up there. But always consistently up there is education, particularly in the eastern side of the state. I would argue it's becoming more important across Pennsylvania. And I think that, in essence, is the box the governor got himself in and wasn't able to get himself out of. I happen to agree with his explanation. Mm-hmm. The stimulus money was used skillfully by Governor Rendell to increase education funding. It went away. Corbett increased state funding, but never got back to the level of where the funding was with the stimulus money. More importantly, politically, that narrative that Corbett did cuts funding became the narrative for 2 years. And while I was in rooms where the governor explained it to people, he never explained it to the vast population and never countered the air campaign that was waged against him on that.
But I wonder what TJ said, which is that here was this source of revenue, a Severance tax on natural gas, that could have backfilled some of this lost revenue.
Oh, certainly it's a source of revenue that would have been very useful for that. The governor made that pledge. He What the energy companies will tell you
right.
is while we pay a severance tax or they pay a severance tax in other states, they don't pay in other states the same kind of corporate taxes and fees that Pennsylvania levies on them. That doesn't end the dialogue, in my opinion. That creates the problem to be solved. How do you make it an even playing field for Pennsylvania to compete with these other states? And maybe it didn't have to be 4%. Maybe it could have been, in addition to the 1%, another percent or 2%. But I think it's a complex issue. Unfortunately, complex issues don't play well in campaigns. The simple issues that Tom Wolf has grabbed onto play very well.
You agree with that, TJ?
Well, I don't. Well, not necessarily. No, I mean, listen, it's about priorities, and the governor has demonstrated. Alan said it best. I mean, you know, there really isn't been any great surprises here. Many of the things that the governor has accomplished, he said he would. They happen to not be very popular, but nonetheless, he's accomplished them. So it's about priorities, and you know, whether it's, you know, oftentimes you'll get federal grants to fund police officers in locales for a certain amount of time, and then it once that money dries up, it usually is ratcheted down over time. Then it's incumbent upon the people to say, hey, listen, you know, now it's our turn to pick up the baton and fund these things. And the governor just chose to fund other things, and you know, again, he's been straight up about it. The problem is, it's, you know, his being straight up about it has just made the problem worse in many respects.
We have a Facebook comment from Paul. What are the points of disagreement on energy policy? And if I can add to that, TJ, I'll go back to you because we've done so many shows on Marcellus Shale and natural gas drilling. There is a subset, I would say, of probably progressive / Democratic voters. They don't want natural gas drilling at all in
the
state.
Sure, the Democratic Party of Pennsylvania passed a resolution calling for a moratorium on fracking.
Right. I mean, do you see Tom Wolf?
Oh, God, no.
Okay, no, why not?
Because he understands the economic importance of these jobs. You know, there can be there needs to be a balance, and that can be arrived at. That can be achieved. You know, you need to have the environment, as Katie would say, the environmental cop on the beat.
Katie McGinty.
Yeah, sure, who contested in the primary, of course. And, you know, and so, yeah, and Tom has been very upfront about the notion that, you know, the economy in southwestern Pennsylvania continues to lag behind other parts of the state and other parts of the nation. So these jobs are critically important. Where we may do a better, where we can do a better job is on the environmental protections that need to be inherent, embedded in what we do in this state. But Tom Wolf does not believe that we should have a moratorium and not take advantage of this resource that can help us end our dependence on foreign sources of energy.
Did you want to add something, Alan, to that?
Well, no, we agree on this point. I think it's just too great a resource to ignore or to shut out. The one point that I would add to the point about environmental protections, I happen to think that our current DEP has done a good job and performed a good balance between environmental protection stewardship and partnership in terms of making sure the environment is handled the right way and the safe way with fracking. I question with government in general, and in this case specifically, whether that's been communicated well enough, as well as I also question whether the benefits of the resource have been communicated well enough. I mean, the impact fee has helped all of Pennsylvania, not just the—
I don't think people know that.
I agree. I live in Chester County. They get almost $1 million from the impact fee annually. There's no fracking in Chester County, but I don't think that's been communicated well enough in addition.
And that's Alan Novak. He's former chairman of the Republican State Committee of Pennsylvania, as well currently the president and founder of Novak Strategic Advisors, and that's a public and government affairs firm located in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Also with us, T.J. Rooney, former chair of the Pennsylvania Democratic Party, also former member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, currently a partner at Eisenhower Rooney. That's an issue advocacy firm also in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And we are doing our Thursday edition of Radio Time Times, a show we call Ballot Talks, talking about election politics. And we've been focusing largely on the governor's race here in Pennsylvania, the race between Tom Corbett, the incumbent, and his challenger, Tom Wolf. And we're curious, have you made up your mind? We want to know if you have. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. I often think when we do shows here from Philadelphia, you know, largely the sort of eastern half of the state, how much this part of the state knows about the western part of the state and vice versa. As two people that know the state pretty well, and back to you, TJ, are we sort of two Pennsylvanians?
Yes. Yeah, in many respects. You know, I don't buy the old Carville thing anymore.
Alabama
in between. It's just not the case. I don't even know that it ever was. But in any event, we do have two different Pennsylvanians. You know, if you look at just take Philly and Pittsburgh, so much different. I mean, even from the climate. It's, you know.
I mean, literally the weather.
Literally,
and the
weather in Pittsburgh. I think they have more cloudy days than Seattle does.
Really?
Yeah, it's wild. So, like, there's a different mindset, and they're great people. Make no bones about it. I love Western Pennsylvania. I'm a roomie.
Do you not like us?
No. Well, hell, I live here, so of course I do. But you know, there's a difference. There's a nuance to the politics, and I'm not entirely sure the governor has ever grasped that nuance and be able to. You know, one thing you need to do in this state is craft a clear and concise message that you can take with you anywhere. And, you know, saying one thing here and one thing there is just ultimately going to trip you up and get you in trouble. And, you know, there hasn't been the consistency of thought and message in coming out of the front office that there needs to be.
How do you see it, Alan?
I think that making sure you define yourself and you define your priorities is a never-ending part of the job. And it isn't done in one or two speeches. It's done consistently and deliberately. And almost with a rigid discipline to do it and make it always a part of the schedule. I don't see that here.
Mm.
And I don't want to compare the governor to previous governors, but I will say that other governors, when they made a priority, decided they were going to do statewide tours and media events and public events to pound a message home and drill it down. And it's harder today with social media, but I still think it's possible.
Let me ask you about the fact that there are, I think, something like 12% more Democrats in Pennsylvania, I guess registered Democrats, than Republicans. There are a growing number of independents. But we also know oftentimes in off-year elections, Democrats don't necessarily go to the polls. I'm looking at you, TJ. Why this sort of disconnect, do you think, between voting and I'm making a broad generalization about Democrats here, but do you think they have the party has a voter turnout problem?
No, well, we have a voter turnout challenge for sure. And, you know, we typically don't do nearly as well in the off years as we do in the presidential years. And there's a myriad of reasons and factors that contribute to that. But the goal here is very simple and straightforward. We need to have a good turnout. We don't need to set records, but we need to be very diligent and dogged. And I can tell you from firsthand knowledge, the campaign is spending an inordinate amount of time on field, on grassroots, on door knocking, on phone calling. I see it every day. You need to have that component.
And Ellen, how do you see independents? I mean, they've been called many things besides independents. How do you see them?
A growing part of the population that we better not ignore.
Fastest growing.
I was talking to a county party chair from Lancaster County, last month, who said for every 10 registrations in Lancaster County, 3 are Republican, 3 are Democrat, 4 are independent.
Wow.
That's a sobering number for party leaders. Another factor in this election that I find very interesting is Tom Wolf is a mid-state candidate.
From York. Right?
He's a Democrat from York. I think that also is contributing somewhat to the disparity between Republicans rallied around Corbett and Democrats rallied around Wolf. I think there are some Republicans in mid-state that know Tom Wolf or were hooked in right away by the first couple of commercials and don't find him threatening.
Oh. And that's important, I guess.
In mid-state, he is not a threatening Philly, Pittsburgh Democrat.
And Alan is often recited, and it's absolutely true. It'll be interesting to see if Quinnipiac retested it. But There was another, I don't know if it was a Q poll, but recently there was a poll that suggested that the governor was leading marginally among evangelical voters and gun owners. You know, the governor should be
kicking. And we have a lot of them, don't we?
Oh, my goodness. He should be kicking the bejesus out of Tom Wolf among those self-identified voters. And he's not. And again, and that all makes sense based upon what we've seen this morning in the subset numbers among women, among men, among, you know, independents, how he's leading it all. There's no, Marty, I guess what I'm saying is there's no glaring weakness to where he finds himself at this moment in time.
But if you are declaring yourself an independent in Pennsylvania, you don't get to vote in the primary. I mean, this is a state that is really tough on independent voters and independent candidates, TJ.
Absolutely.
I mean, both parties have sort of shut the door.
We had the good fortune to speak at Ursinus College last evening, and we talked about that. How can you, as a party leader, how can you attract independents into the fold? And I don't know. I mean, we see the exact opposite. We see independents registration numbers being bolstered. They're not shrinking. Yeah, and there were many things that we could consider, including in some form or fashion allowing independents to vote in primaries, or at least, Marty, if ballot access is a huge big issue, and it is for independent voters, maybe we lower the threshold. I mean, I think I said last night that if you want to run for office as an independent, you got to jump over a fence, through three hoops, get bit by a dog, hit by a car, and pray, you know, that you're going to get on the ballot. And that may be something that we should look at.
You think we should make it easier for third-party candidates to get
on the
ballot?
Something, this is proof that we're no longer party chairman.
Clearly.
We would have never said this in our previous
roles. I know, and I appreciate the fact that you are
but,
saying it.
No, TJ said exactly what he just related last night in response to something I said, which is, you know, maybe you could look at, I'm not ready to full-scale endorse it, but maybe you could look at allowing independents and nonpartisans to vote in primaries as long as they chose which one. They'd go in and say, I want the Republican ballot or I want the Democrat ballot. But, you know, maybe you could franchise them in primaries. That would get huge resistance from parties at all levels.
I was just going to say, the parties, they wouldn't go for that, would they?
They wouldn't, but what you need to do is step back and look at other states. It hasn't had some devastating, cataclysmic effect on outcome among Democrats. You know, Democrats can win elections. And again, I haven't had an epiphany or I haven't been hit by a meteor or anything, but I do think, you know, we need to be more inclusive about our politics. And we would, you know, and I say that, but I also know that we would benefit. Democrats would benefit by it, I think, more so than Republicans. So what we talk about, how do you grow the party in this kind of environment? By being more inclusive, not less inclusive.
Yeah, I have a second home in Texas, and there anybody can vote for anybody in any primary. I mean, they don't care what your registration is, and you can just go in and, you know, and in states out west where that tends to predominate, that tends to be the rule, it actually benefits the party in power because I can say in Texas there are a lot of conservative Democrats that recently would come to the polls and vote for the Republican candidate. I think you're seeing it in some other states work the other way, and it doesn't hurt the party in power.
Well, that's Alan Novak along with T.J. Rooney, our guests in this hour of Radio Times, Ballot Talks on Radio Times. Come on, folks, join our conversation. We're talking about politics. We're talking about voting for the governor. We want to know where you stand. 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Delaware Theater Company opens their 36th anniversary season with A.R. Gurney's Love Letters, September 13th through October 5th. A poetic, elegant, and touching piece of theater starring Michael Learned from TV's The Waltons and Nurse and Daniel Davis from TV's The Nanny and Star Trek. Haven't you ever noticed that love comes when you least expect it? Tickets at 302-594-1100 or online at DelawareTheater.org. The Delaware Theater Company supports WHYY.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. The summer may be coming to an end, but that doesn't mean the music you listen to can't keep it alive a bit longer. KCRW DJ Ann Litt joins us with some final songs of summer next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, the Cooper Neurological Institute offers a full range of neurological and neurosurgical interventions, including minimally invasive brain surgery and complex spinal procedures. From epilepsy, migraine, and movement disorder care to Leskell Gamma Knife Perfection Technology and neuro-oncology services, Cooper provides access to specialists at 10 locations in South Jersey and Pennsylvania. For a consultation, cooperhealth.org/CNI or 856-968-7965.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. Incumbent Pennsylvania Governor Republican Tom Corbett has his work cut out for him if he wants to get reelected. The election is actually less than 2 months away. His Democratic challenger, Tom Wolf, has a sizable lead in recent polls, including a brand new one from Quinnipiac this morning that puts him ahead 59-35%. We're talking about what this all means and talking about the state of politics in Pennsylvania. And after I shamed our callers, an explosion of phone calls. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Let me say on the air what I've been saying to you off the air, which is that you're a Republican, Alan, TJ, you're a Democrat, and you are speaking your mind, you're getting along, you're letting each other finish sentences. Is this because you no longer are in party politics? You're nodding your head, TJ. Yes?
Oh, sure. I mean, it's far more liberating, fun.
Even fun?
Oh, my God. I love this guy. I mean, we do this thing. We do go around, talk about stuff that we actually believe in. We don't, as Alan would suggest, I don't have much of a filter most days. So it's great to be. It's kind of like that movie Bullworth, you know, when the guy ran and he just said whatever the heck he felt like. It's kind of like emancipated.
Is it emancipating for you?
It is. It is. It's fun. I love TJ. I respect his political acumen. I respect his candor. And it's just a lot of fun to do it with him. And I think we both have the credibility and experience that we understand the game and we understand what's going on. I think we both can explain it pretty well.
And we're both hardcore. I mean, he's a hardcore Republican. I'm a hardcore Democrat. I think hopefully the thing that, you know, we respect each other. And there's a lack of civility and respect in politics today. It's sorely lacking and much needed. And, you know, if there's any, listen, I understand that we are a pimple on the proverbial elephant's behind. But if we can set an example, you know, if we can kind of lead by or conduct ourselves, you know, we're guests in your listeners' living rooms and cars today. The last thing you invite a guest into your home or car, the last thing you want them to do is like eat each other's faces off. So, you know, there needs to be civility.
But you're not running for office. I mean, neither of you are. I mean,
right.
Alan, doesn't that free you up a bit?
Oh, it certainly does. Yeah. It certainly does. Yeah. And, It's nice to be honest, to be able to be honest and not have to run it through the filter of, okay, what do I have to say versus what do I really want to say or what do I really believe?
And if you're thoughtful enough to ask a question, I'd be a fool to sit here and not give you an honest answer.
Oh. Well, let me ask you about Obama.
Sure.
President Obama, do you think he'll come to Pennsylvania? And do you think he would be an asset to Tom Wolf, who's obviously running for governor? Well ahead. Is there a reason
sure.
to bring Obama in?
President Obama is no different, Marty, than any second-term president and the issues that they face. I mean, typically in the last term or the last half of their term, is they tend to be unpopular. But make no mistake about it, Barack Obama is wildly popular among many segments of the community here in Philadelphia and across the state. So, sure, I mean, might he come in? I don't know. I mean, those decisions will be made based upon, you know, how the race continues to progress. But at the end of the day, the president can be used very effectively to bring about a good turnout that we need.
Do you see him as an asset liability for the day?
I think the president's been criticized, among other things, for doing so many fundraisers. I would not be one of the people that criticize him for that. That's the thing he can do best. He raises money among hardcore Democrats in all of the major cities. And that's the way, as a political strategist, I would use him. I wouldn't put him in a rally in Harrisburg. I wouldn't put him in a rally in Lancaster. I don't think Tom Wolf needs that. The problem, to answer your question, will he come to Pennsylvania? I think it depends on where else he may be needed to raise money and boost other campaigns. I was saying earlier that there's a lot of close governor races in the country. Wisconsin's a big one, Florida, Michigan. Those races, unless this race gets close, the focus shifts to those races for several things, including the president's attention and money from outside groups.
Did you want to add to that?
Oh, no.
Let's talk about money. I mean, how much is just politics about raising money now?
Oh, it's hugely relevant and impactful and important. And you devote as a candidate an inordinate amount of time to do it, both, you know, with me through meetings and phone calls and events. But yeah, I mean, it's an issue that, you know, vexes many people and plagues our politics in many respects. But that's, I'm sure, a whole other topic for another show that would take many hours.
We have devoted many hours to this. and in Pennsylvania, there are no limits. I mean,
correct.
It's so that. Do you see that as a problem, Alan?
No, actually, I support that. I'm for disclosure. I'm for transparency. I think Tom Ridge said it best when he was governor. I'm not for reforms that limit people. I'm for processes that create transparency and reporting so that everybody can see who's giving what to whom.
It even vexed me when I was in the legislature. You know, we talk about campaign finance reform. The one thing that was always kind of obvious and simplistic to me, but I think would have a tremendous impact, is more reporting. Now, I don't mean necessarily reporting every check that you receive, but, you know, in Pennsylvania, you report like 30 days before and then 30 days after. Well, in between those 60 days, a lot of money flies around.
Absolutely.
That comes in from places that, you know, as a voter, I would want to know. If so-and-so is funding this candidate, that may be a very, very relevant and important decision or something I need to know. So I think, you know, shining the light. I agree with Alan. I don't think limits are necessarily the answer, but knowing who's funding campaigns, the transparency, the sunshine, the disinfectant that brings to the process is sorely needed.
What about outside money? And I mean, now they're, you know, with the Supreme Court case, I mean, there are just so many ways you can package money and become a nonprofit.
Well, and, you know, I've said this a number of times on this point. Campaign operatives figure out ways to win. Campaign operatives are the best at seeing what the rules are, what changes those rules made that allow certain activity, and then going all out to win. So I don't think we should be shocked by this. I think this was a natural outgrowth of the case, and I don't put a value on it at all other than people are in the game to win. The rules change. They figure out ways to win under the new rules, and money flows where it's going to flow. And I'm not one for limitations. I'm one for more transparency.
I mean, the money flows to ads on TV, the sort of relentless, you know, if you turn your TV on, you're going to see, especially the closer you get to Election Day, you're going to see one ad after another.
Yeah.
Is that a good investment, do you think, TJ?
You mean for a campaign or a candidate?
Yeah. For the country. I don't know.
Yeah. Marty, it goes back to something Alan said, and I absolutely agree with that. I want, as a voter, to know where the money's coming from, whom the money is coming. That means more to me than anything else. And sure, you're going to be on TV. That's a part of politics. That's a central, critical part of politics. That's how Tom Wolf jumped out to a commanding lead in the primary and never looked back. I mean, that's what caused him to win 67 out of 67 counties in the Commonwealth. And in a primary was contested by three other very, very substantive and substantial people. So I'm not so concerned about ads as I am is the money, where the money comes to put them on TV.
And just to be transparent here, we are having problems with our telephone, which is why we aren't getting callers. It looks like they're frozen here on my computer, but I will give out the email address, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. I do have an email. One of the reasons to register independents in Pennsylvania is that when I think of either Republicans or Democrats in Pennsylvania, I think corruption. This is Beverly. You know, a lot of people are feeling that the system stinks.
Well, in some respects, the system
does.
I
don't know if it's corruption, but
no, no. I would not. Listen, there are so many good men and women that serve in elected office. You know, what I would submit to you, Marty, it's the people on the fringes, the people who either hair is on fire or they have a tinfoil hat on. Those are the things that cause people like Beverly to become very cynical and turned off by politics. But the only thing I would respectfully submit to you, Beverly, is that there are many, many, many good men and women who are in, you know, seeking office for exactly the right reasons. Unfortunately, you don't hear from them very often. When you turn on your television, bookers don't put on people who want to get to yes. Bookers put on people on TV whose hair is on fire or are wearing a tinfoil hat.
You're nodding your head.
I agree. I've always looked at public service. I've always looked at holding elected office and governing as public service. And I think we're making it more difficult for people to perceive it that way because the attention goes to the people on the extremes. But I do agree 100% with TJ. There are great men and women who are doing public service in elected capacities at all levels of government, and they go there for the right reasons, hoping to do good.
Yep.
Well, a couple of more emails here I have. I'm an independent voter leaning libertarian, and I will vote for the candidate who has the best solutions. I mean, that seems like a very practical approach, too.
And a fast and growing segment of our voting population is somebody who would identify exactly like that person who sent the email.
Another one from Jay. My two issues are gay rights and marijuana reform. Corbett was wrong on both counts, judging from his tenure. I mean, there is, you can get married in Pennsylvania now if you're a gay couple. And also marijuana, I don't know where that'll go. It's been loosened here in Philadelphia. Do you think marijuana is an issue, TJ, that can resonate outside of this area?
Oh, I think it's an issue that the legislature and the governor will contend with in the coming years for a myriad of reasons, including health and finance. I mean, you can help people.
There's money to be made.
You can help people who are sick, and you can make money off of it. I mean, for a lot of people would view that as a no-brainer subject to take up.
Even in Pennsylvania, Alex.
Even in Pennsylvania,
I think so, really?
it's going to be an issue. You know, here's the thing about Tom Corbett that's vexing to some of us. He kind of loosened up on those two issues that Jay raised. He loosened up, on gay marriage, and he loosened up on medical use of marijuana, but nobody knows it.
No.
I mean, I'm not given where he started, he could hardly go out and beat the drum and be in the vanguard. But he kind of pivoted away from a staunch ultra-conservative position, but he doesn't get credit for it.
Which probably explains his 66%, vote share among Republicans at this point in time. He's hacked off a third of them.
Yeah.
Well, he did, whether he was joking or not, Ellen, I don't know, but he did make this comparison between brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
Well, the kind of incest comparison.
He does.
That did not help him.
He does have a few gaffes out there.
If there's a more ham-handed analogy maker, maybe our esteemed governor.
Let's talk about some other races. We've been focusing largely on the governor's race, but let me go back to you, Alan. What races, other races in Pennsylvania are you looking at or have your eye on?
A lot of attention is going to be on the Pennsylvania Senate because it starts at a 27-23 Republican majority. There are about five or six Senate races in Pennsylvania that are going to make the difference in whether Republicans remain in the majority or not. And most of them are here in Southeast Pennsylvania, the Philadelphia media market. And I define that market as going up to where TJ lives in Allentown, Bethlehem area. So I think four of the key Senate races are in the Philadelphia media market.
Do you see it that way?
No, I do. I think it's going to be a tough stretch for the state House of Representatives to flip from Republican to Democrat, although I'm confident there'll be Democratic gains. But sure, the state Senate is the enchilada in addition to the governor's office that's kind of up for grabs. And if you talk, Marty, to Republicans in some of these tough seats, when they see a 24-point differential, listen, at the end of the day, is it going to be 24 points? No, I don't think it will. But Marty, if you start creeping around 15, then that could have a devastating effect on down ballot races. And in tough Senate races, especially in the Southeast, where Tom Wolf is going to do exceedingly well, that's a sticky wicket for some incumbent office holders.
Let me get Gar from Cherry Hill, New Jersey, to join us on Radio Times. Gar, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you, Marty. Love your show.
Thanks.
Every day.
Thanks.
Anyway, my comment is simple. I think both parties should be absolutely ashamed of themselves. 40% of the voters out there are registered independent. The parties have colluded to exclude these voters, 40%, from primary elections. I think all elections should be open, with the top two vote-getters going to a final ballot. And if both parties actually supported Jeffersonian democracy, they would uphold such a movement.
Well, Gar, let me see what our guests have to say. And it sounds like, Alan, you're close to what Gar was saying based on your experience in Texas.
In Texas, it's wide open. Anybody can vote in a primary. There is a conversation occurring. I wouldn't say there's legislation, but there is a conversation occurring to enfranchise independent voters in the Pennsylvania primary. It's got a long way to go.
Mm-hmm.
But leaders that are respected leaders are at least having a conversation on Gar's point.
And it's a multifaceted point that Gar makes. I mean, there are many different ways that you could franchise independent voters. And so there in and of itself, there's probably five, six, seven reasonably good options or courses that you might pursue.
We have an email from Julie. I hope I can read this. As a new citizen, I wouldn't have joined a party if it hadn't bought me access to a primary and a say who my candidate is. I mean, this seems to be a theme, and I know you two have a bit of a dog and pony show. Is this a theme that you have run across in your joint appearances, which is people, not just their frustration with the system, but looking for something different, looking for something outside the Republican and Democratic parties, Alan?
Well, I think it comes across in two ways. It comes across directly the way that a couple of your listeners have presented it. It also comes across when you look down into the Pew Research polling on polarization. We still have a country where better than 50% of the people are in the middle. And I think today, with some of the feelings about the system and the parties, more people are registering independent. So I think it comes into play when we talk to people, both with the polarization as well as the direct feelings about the parties.
I would just have to submit, Marty, that the thing that I, or at least my ears are attuned to most, are folks that express just an incredible frustration over the inability for government to get anything done. And embedded in that is the lack of civility that goes along with it. That needs to be, you need strong leadership to get things done. And when things do get done, you know, oftentimes it may not be the exact thing that you want, but you know your government is working, it's functioning. And I do agree with Alan. Big ticket items that are on our plate, will be on our plate for some time to come, need to have, you just can't pass it with one party. You can if you have the numbers, but at the end of the day, I think it's a lot more productive to be more inclusive.
Well, on that note, my thanks to both of you for joining us today on Radio Times. T.J. Rooney, thanks very much.
Thanks so much. A pleasure.
A pleasure for us as well. And Alan Novak, thank you for joining us on Radio Times.
My pleasure. Thank you, Marty.
You're very welcome. And go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You can find out much more about this program, including check out our Facebook page, and you can see pictures of our guests. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Do stay with us for hour two. We'll be right back.